we make people get involved. So they're involved in committees, they're involved in decisions. They're not just here, go do the work. And you explain to them how, why. We do extra things. We have parties, we have events, and we just treat people well. And I know it sounds easy, but it's not that easy.
You are listening to Fingerprints on Success, the podcast dedicated to highlighting unique imprints left by business leaders, mentors, and successful entrepreneurs. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of serial entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders, and coaches to uncover the secrets behind achieving success both professionally and personally. Guiding you on this podcast is none other than Bill Barrett, an award-winning corporate and business law attorney and CEO of the law firm Mandelbaum Barrett PC, where he and his team have provided a full array of legal services to both businesses and individuals throughout the country. Get ready and let's get to the show.
Hi, it's Bill Barrett, and today we have a true expert in the house, Dave Roth, the managing partner at RRBB, with over 35 years of experience in accounting, auditing, and tax services. You're going to hear how Dave built a small accounting firm into a large regional group serving clients worldwide. If you want to learn about building and scaling your business, don't miss this episode. Let's reveal the fingerprints on success of Dave Roth. Hey, everybody. Bill Barrett here. Welcome to the show. I'm thrilled to have my guest, Dave Roth, with me today. Dave, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Bill.
Absolutely. So, Dave, I thought a great place to start today would be for those people who don't know you, give them a little bit of background on what you do and your journey and kind of how you got to where you are now. And, you know, give a sense of people of, you know, how Dave Roth got to be Dave Roth today.
Okay. So I'm a CPA with the CEO with RRBB, an accounting firm of approximately 75 people in Somerset, New Jersey. I guess my journey started from growing up in Colonia, New Jersey. And after growing, I went to Rutgers University, and then I started with a couple of firms until I came here. So my whole journey was about 15 miles in radius. From where I grew up, where I went to school, to where I am today. So I haven't had a lot of movement, but in a lot of ways, it helped. And I can explain that later of how it helped me in my career to get to where we are today.
Yeah, Jersey strong and proud. Okay. Yeah. So Dave, one of the things I think that is interesting is that you've, you know, spent a career helping a lot of entrepreneurs throughout the country and even other places in the world build their businesses. But at the same time, you built a business. When you started out, you know, the firm that you're now the CEO of and that you've built up to 75 professionals, what was it when you first came on board?
When I came on board, I came in as a 3-year person, and there was about 20 to 22 people that worked here. And we were a small firm, but we had some talent, and I kind of grew through the ranks and became a partner, and I bought out, I think, 13 partners in my lifetime and brought up, mentored and brought through other partners. And till today, we're 13 strong, and it's a great place to be, and very proud of how the firm is going and where we are today.
So when you think back on, you know, I know it's funny that you say the journey's only been about 15 square miles, but when you think about the journey of tripling the size of a company and all the clients that you've served well, and I know just from knowing you that the retention of your clients is off the charts, you know, once people, you know, come on board with you and the firm, they rarely ever leave. So when you reflect on that, what would you say are some guiding principles or kind of fundamental philosophies that you've had that you think when you look back, you say to yourself, you know, because of that, that's a big contributing factor to how we got here?
So what I found most important is obviously one, always do the right thing and be honest and straightforward with everything you do. But the biggest difference, And it's funny because some of my partners smile when we tell the story is I always try to find commonality. And as an example, where are you from? They tell me they're from Denver. Oh, do you know Bill Barrett? Right. All of a sudden they know Bill Barrett. They feel good. They have a rapport with me. And then you build it. And, you know, most of my clients have become really good friends over the years. And it's just building the rapport, building the commonality and enjoying who you're dealing with. You know, that's a lot of fun. And even referral sources. I mean, Bill, we met 25 years ago. I mean, it seems
25 years ago. Yeah.
We worked on a client and we just, you know, common rapport, common things that we're interested in, like even the sad sports that we follow with the Jets and the Mets. And
you're going to ruin my public reputation when you tell everyone I'm a Jet and a Met fan.
You know, that's kind of what you have. And you build the rapport and people think of you and you think of them and you like dealing with who you like dealing with. And it's tremendous. It makes it less work and more fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you should say that because not only have I experienced that as well in my career, when you look at how many of your clients are your good personal friends, but it's interesting when so many professionals and entrepreneurs talk about their clients like that, because I think a common thread that you see is a passion for people, like people who like people and like to have relationships and enjoy other people tend to, you know, it's a natural evolution that you're working with someone and you gravitate that way. It's not common, but it's common among people that have that kind of success in those types of relationships.
Yeah.
So on the flip side of that, when you look back, you know, if Dave Roth today could be an advisor to the younger, I'm not going to say young, I'm going to say the younger Dave Roth, what would he tell him about pitfalls or things to watch out for, or kind of, hey, if I could be advising myself, I would be saying, you know, I don't want to do that. Or that's not the best road or path. What would you say?
So I think looking back, it's not every client is for you and not every client might mesh with me or not every client might be right for the firm. So when you're young and you're going through and you want to make your name for yourself, you're taking on clients. And sometimes that client might not be the best fit, or maybe they have some skeletons that you're really not, shouldn't be dealing with. And what I would, if I could do it again, and I've learned, it's funny, I've learned this and I mentor my people with this, but I didn't do this when I was younger, was not take on or get rid of clients that you didn't think were the right fit earlier, because it always comes back and bites you. I had a client that we took on. It was a pretty sizable company. And you started looking through and we were doing a certified audit and you started looking and you're like, the guy spends a little lavishly, lives in a lavish house. You know, he yelled a lot. You know, you have a rapport, but it's not the rapport of somebody you really want to be with. And it ended up being in this case, a total fraud.
Oh, wow.
He had books being done offshore. I mean, we did a great job, but, you know, you got snookered a little bit. You think about that and you're like, you should have saw the warning signs coming. And you know, since that was years ago, and you know, we watch everything like a hawk, and I should have had my antennas up a little better. So the point is, if you see something you don't like, go with your gut and say goodbye.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I often tell some of the younger attorneys in my firm that sometimes the best engagement is the one you didn't take.
Right.
And it is so true when you're building and you're trying to kind of scale up that ladder. You're working so hard to develop business and you know, whether you're a professional entrepreneur, and you know, your instincts are often spot on, and most of the time your gut is spot on, but there's that desire to say, oh no, like I can make a success of this. And those people, by the way, who strive to be successful always feel like that they could overcome the difficult client or the difficult issue or obstacle, but usually it comes with a lot of heartburn in the end. Yeah, that's a lesson that I think you almost have to keep learning over and over, even as you do get older. Because if you, you know, if you still get excited about what you do, and I know you do, and I do, you still get excited about new clients. But when your radar is telling you maybe this isn't the right fit, you should probably run.
100%.
Yeah. So shifting gears a little bit, you know, one of the, you know, our show is called Fingerprints on Success, and we try to explore all different, you know, issues and things regarding success. One of those is looking back on people that had an impact in your life. You know, sometimes people might call them mentors. Other times it's just people that had an influence that when, and as it happens, it might not even be conscious, but then you reflect on it years later and say, wow, you know, I have certain traits, qualities, or things that have helped me in my life or made me who I am. And, you know, but for this person, maybe I wouldn't have that. You know, share with us, you know, someone in your life that when you look back made that kind of impact.
I'm going to share two people. One more of the way you came across with the questioning, and one that kind of motivated me. And it's an interesting story. So the first one was my father owned a retail store in Newark, right? And he sold shades, blinds, windows, things like that. So when everybody was having fun and playing ball and doing things on a Saturday or going to a football game, I had to go to work in Newark. You know, when I was 9 years old till probably 17. So I'd go to work in Newark and we get there and my father would say, go wash the windows. I went, now, by the way, this is Newark in the middle of the riots. I'm outside washing windows. But okay, you gave me some work ethic, which is great.
At least you had windows during the riots. So.
Well, we did have the things that came over at the end of the day and in the beginning. But while the day was going on, we had windows. And then I'd be sitting there and somebody would walk in and my father would go, that guy's not buying. I said, how do you know? Just watch. And he'd go through it and they wouldn't buy. Or somebody come in, he goes, I got this one. They're going to buy a lot. Like the gut feel and what he knew by selling was pretty amazing. But so what he did, I'm 9 years old or 10 years old, go sell this guy. I think he wanted me to sell the people he didn't think were going to buy anyway. And if somebody was going to buy, then he would come in and you know, pay me out. But he threw me out to the wolves. And, you know, I was a fairly shy kid. And, you know, I'm dealing with adults that are a lot older than me. And he's watching over, but he made me learn how to sell. And I'd have to go and try to sell it. And then when they bought it, I'd go to the cash register because back then it's a real old-fashioned cash register and they were paying in cash. And so I learned the money, I learned the sales. And the funny part, I guess, I'll give you some anecdote and the funny part about this. At the end of the day, we used to have to go to the back into the parking lot. And my father would say, okay, here. And he put an envelope into my jacket. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, if anybody goes after, just keep going. I'm like, I didn't realize my father was putting cash into my, in case somebody went after him, that I was, nobody would go after a kid. Anyway, I looked back at that, it was crazy. But anyway, I learned. So I guess, you know, I didn't realize he was mentoring me at the time, but he was actually mentoring me from a sales perspective, from a handling money perspective, and from a business perspective. Yeah. So,
and in a big way, really, because, you know, one of the things I think everybody learns in any business, in any vertical, professional services, retail, manufacturing, whatever, you know, doesn't matter how good your service is, doesn't matter how good your product is, doesn't matter. Nothing matters if you can't sell it. If you can't convince the consumer to want it and to be able to close it, then you just have a lot of good ideas and a lot of knowledge, but you don't really have any money.
And actually, my father pushed me towards accounting. He goes, you don't want to do this like I'm doing. You know, so he did actually push me towards accounting, which is interesting. The other little motivation in my life, I was a first-year partner. And we were doing bonuses. And one of my partners said to me, you know, you're good, but you're not as good as you think you are. And I remember that. And by the way, he quit the next year. And I always said, you know what, let's see what we can do here. And, you know, when he left, he had 10 people. He's still working. He has two. And, you know, we've tripled in size. So the motivation was pretty good. And I kind of enjoyed that. So,
yeah. Well, you know, it's kind of, that's interesting too, because we all turn different things into motivation. I think, you know, kind of comes into play with even managing people, right? Where you learn how everyone gets motivated differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people, you know, a good kick in the butt, or some people challenging them about what they can't do. You know, not all minds and personalities are created the same.
You know, it's funny. You know, I don't think he was trying to motivate me.
No.
Look at his motivation, but yes, I get it.
Let's say you took it. Oh, he definitely wasn't trying to motivate you, but he just didn't know that he was doing it.
Right.
So, Dave, my next question for you is really just sharing with the audience what you think is kind of a hot topic right now, something you're seeing, whether it's with your clients or yourself, that people might be having a challenge navigating, and maybe share with us some ideas on how you're dealing with the issue and or advising your clients to deal with the issue.
Yeah. So the biggest issue I see is the labor market and the lack of, mostly, you know, from a manufacturing side, nobody's going into wanting to be, you know, a labor worker, right? But from our side and how it relates to us is there's not as many people going into accounting. When they changed accounting to a five-year profession, that was about 5 years or 6 years ago, that really hurt the profession a little bit. And I hate to say accounting's not sexy, but it's not as sexy as investment banking or doing a hedge fund. You know, listen, I always thought accounting was a nice steady gig and a nice steady income. So it's loosened up a little in the last few months, but what we've seen is the, you know, in our industry, the big four, which is, you know, the Deloitte's, the Ernst & Young, those kind of firms, they were hiring people from an early stage, say freshman year, instead of, you know, junior year intern. And that, you know, that made it a little tough on us. But what we've done is we're out at all the schools. We've been hiring interns. From interns, they start into accounting. And we have about four or five managers that came from our internship program. So we're trying to do it from within and teaching them our way. And to me, that's the best way to do it and to deal with this issue. We give them flexibility. We promote, you know, how we're a family and how we work together, and we give it a very good culture, and we don't have a lot of turnover, which is really nice. So, you know, it's worked for us, but it's a challenge.
Yeah.
It's definitely a challenge.
When you think about your retention, just to ask you a follow-up question, you know, that you have all this great retention, can you attribute it to anything? I mean, you know, I know it's not just luck, you know, what do you think are some of the things that why people stay the way they do at your firm?
So one, we pay well, right?
Okay.
Two, we make people get involved. So they're involved in committees, they're involved in decisions. They're not just here, go do the work. And, you know, you explain to them how, why. We do extra things. We have parties, we have events, and we just treat people well. And I know it sounds easy, but it's not that easy. You know, we've also outsourced mostly to the Philippines. And that's, we have, I think right now we have four people from the Philippines, and they speak our language. They work on our time frame. They work hard. They're tremendous and very likable. And, you know, we try to bring them into the culture too. So that's been successful.
So something that, you know, some of our listeners could maybe take from, you know, in terms of, you know, I think culture eating, you know, there's an old saying, right? That culture eats strategy for breakfast all the time, I think is something like that. And, you know, and the outsourcing concept too, you know, that's something that I don't think jumps to mind for people right away. But these are important things because, you know, one of the things I was working with a consultant in the human resource space, and he showed an interesting statistic, which was he said, the difficulty in finding good people isn't all sorts of sexy reasons that people necessarily think, it's math. And he showed the size of the various generations, you know, and, you know, from the baby boomers and kind of went right down the list and showed that the current generation, which let's like working generation, if you said between like the ages of like, you know, 35 and 55 or whatever, that generation is the smallest generation that we've had in five generations. So it's math. There's just less human beings to actually fill the jobs. And, you know, so everybody is going to deal with issues of, you know, with a growing business, everybody's going to deal with issues of finding talent.
Right.
So I think those are some great strategies.
Enjoying the show so far? We've received fantastic feedback since we started, and we love your questions. Entrepreneurs face unique challenges, and as a corporate attorney and CEO, Bill understands that. Whether it's your first location, industry regulations, succession plans, or exit strategies for your business, the journey is rarely a smooth one. Mandelbaum Barrett PC offers listeners of this podcast a 20-minute consultation with their award-winning team. From mergers and acquisitions to litigation, they help entrepreneurs navigate new opportunities, get invaluable insights, and support to not just survive, but thrive. Click the link in the episode description or visit mblawfirm.com for details. Once again, it's mblawfirm.com. Now, back to our show.
So talking about the talent, what kind of things do you try to do to pay it forward? You know, you talked about, you know, your motivations and your dad being, you know, maybe more of a mentor and a teacher than he even realized at the time growing up. What kind of things do you try to do to develop people and opportunities for the people below you as they're coming up the ladder?
So I must say I was not great at that. Early on, I think I've gotten better as I've gotten older and wiser. So if I get called for a prospect or a potential new client, I always bring one of the younger people with me. And for a few reasons. One, they get to learn. And no better than to learn by watching and seeing and doing and being involved in it. And two, I got to say, there's times that people said to me, you know, you got gray hair. When are you retiring? Now, when I was coming up the ranks, I was the guy who had to prove myself because I was the younger guy bringing in the work. Like, hey, do you have enough experience to do this? And you basically blink your eye, and now all of a sudden you're like, hey, are you getting too old to, you know?
Dave, I don't know what you're talking about.
And it's amazing how fast that happens. But as far as paying forward, you know. Rob Quick in my office, he's 7 or 8 years younger than me. I mentored him from day one, and he's done a tremendous job. Howard Kondo from my office has done. When he came for an interview, I had to interview him twice because he wouldn't talk. And now, you know, it's amazing what he's done and his leadership skills. And some of my younger people now that, you know, sometimes, Bill, you'll refer me something, you go right to one of my younger people and deal with them directly. And that's a beautiful thing. That feels like I've done my job in trying to mentor the next generation. So it feels good.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, too, that sometimes when you think back about and you look at like who your top people are. Isn't it interesting how sometimes there's a direct correlation, or maybe most of the time there's a direct correlation between the stars, if you will, being the ones that maybe you spent the most time with.
Yeah.
And there, you know, there's a fancy word for what you did, which people, you know, I guess like, you know, consultants would call it modeling. That's right. That's the fancy term for it. But basically, you know, it's bringing younger people along and letting them just see what you do and how you do it and how you handle that meeting and how you answer that question and how you conduct yourself. And, you know, I was fortunate. I had great mentors that did that for me. And, you know, when I look at some of the most successful people in my organization that are in my particular group, you know, often the ones that I think had the best mentors in the organization that spent the most time with them seem to excel the most. So there's no doubt that there's a direct correlation.
Yeah.
So let me ask you another question. You know, talk to us a little bit about, I know that recently you've had some developments in, and I know that you've got exciting things that you're looking forward to in the future, which we'll definitely talk about. So you reached a point in your career, you've scaled this, you know, this organization three times the size it was when you first became a partner. You've enjoyed financial success along the way. Why do you think you do what you do? You know what, you know, because I know that you don't have any plans on retiring and that you're excited about the future. So what, you know, what's the why? What's Dave Roth's why that keeps you going?
So I love dealing with the clients. They're my friends. It's the relationships that I built over the last 37 years in this profession, and the clients that I've helped sell and become very wealthy, the clients that are in that process of getting to the next level, and giving them what I know to help them do what others have done before. The clients are your friends. The contacts are your friends. You know, a lot of people today, they don't go out, they don't go to lunch, they don't meet, they don't pick up the phone. To me, it's very difficult. I'm more relationship driven, and I try and mentoring people into doing all and training them. And it's just, it's still so much fun. And it waits. There's very few times I wake up and say, I don't want to do this today. Very few. I mean, everybody gets it once in a while, but very few. And I enjoy doing things with the contacts and the clients and your relationships, going to a game, going to dinner, going to lunch. It, to me, I'm a people person, and I still love that. It's so much fun. And if I can help people, and I help clients, and also help the people under me and the staff, and people learn how to do the same thing. It's really fun, and it keeps you going.
Yeah. So you know, I thought of another question that I hadn't thought originally about asking you, but I think it's apropos. You know, because I was talking about how much you've grown this company and continuing to grow it. A lot of people talk about scaling a bit, what you've done effectively, scaling a business. And you've helped clients do it, but you've also done it yourself as an entrepreneurial accountant. How would you advise somebody to scale a business, you know, to grow a company, to do what you've done? You know, because a lot of people try and a lot of people fail or they stay stagnant. Like, are there any little gems or secrets or ideas that you would say, yeah, listen, if you want to go from 20 or 30 people or 10 people or whatever it is, and you want to be 100, here's kind of some of the things you're going to have to do it.
So I think number one, and you have to have some vision. And I don't know if you're born with vision or you're not, but you have to have a vision. Because I've talked to, even some of my partners don't have the vision that I see versus what they, and it can get frustrating when you see a vision and others don't see the vision with you. So what you have to do is, one, get everybody on board to the vision. Two, you have to, write a business plan, but it's basically put the business plan on paper and try to follow the plan. And there's always going to be different curves in the road. But if you keep your eye on where you want to get to, you have to put good people around you. You know, you're only good as your people. So you have to get really good people around you. You got to get them on board with the vision. You have to get them, everybody paddling in the same direction, because there's always going to be people that want to paddle upstream while you're going downstream. And, you know, they either have to join the group or they're not going to they're not going to make it. And right. Not everybody's going to make it. But I think if you have a plan, you have a written plan, you communication is, you know, communication's key to everything. And you stick to that plan. I think it's really an important constant.
Yeah, no, I think those are great pieces of advice. And, you know, the one thing you talked about was that not everybody's going to make it. You know, there's a saying, sometimes it's addition by subtraction, right? And nobody ever wants to have to part with people. But sometimes when you know you just don't have a right fit team member, you have to move on sometimes from people. And as hard as it is, you know, it's part of growing.
I had a non-equity partner years ago. I went to high school with her. I went to college with her. She got me the job here. I worked with her for a long time. I surpassed her, obviously, but she wasn't doing the right job. And I tried to help her and get there, and because I felt I owed it to her. And my partners eventually were looking at me like, God, Dave, you know, like, she's not doing it.
Right.
And, you know, I had to fire her. And that was the hardest thing. But she couldn't follow the path to where we had to go. But that wasn't an easy thing at all.
No, well, that's the, you know, if you're going to be a leader with a vision and you're going to see it through, there's going to be hard decisions to make along the way, isn't there?
There is.
Yeah. And those ones are really tough, especially when you are a relationship person and a people person, because, you know, sometimes parting with people with whom you have a personal relationship is really, really difficult.
I give people the benefit of the doubt. That might be one of the pitfalls, but I try to do it until I can't. But
yeah,
you know, it's a good thing and a bad thing. So
it is, but you know what? There's a certain culture, you know, you described it a little bit, you know, a little bit of a culture of kindness. And I think that also plays in to your success. Yeah. You know, I mean, you can't do it to the point of being economically foolish, but, you know, companies with a heart, I think, do better than companies without a heart, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So let me fire another one at you. We have a little bit more time. You know, and I always like to kind of finish on this question, which is, you know, what has Dave Roth excited about the future? I mean, I know that you love what you do and that you don't want to stop, but we covered that. But what in particular has you pumped up and excited when you get out of bed in the morning and you're going to work? What's going on?
You know, I love this question because I have the perfect answer. So as an accounting firm of our size, and we do a lot of larger clients, complicated work. I consider us a boutique. And when we looked at where we need to go, we thought about maybe we should merge with other firms, right? And so what we looked at was, what do we want to be? Well, we want to be autonomous. We want to keep our name. We built that brand for, you know, 60 years, and we want to keep that brand. We want to keep our location. We want to be where we are. And we want to still be entrepreneurial, because that's the spirit that we have for us and for our clients. And I've talked to a lot of firms that we've been approached 2-3 times a year for the last 10 years. I say no, 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 no. And I met a group last April. And it was a group of their so-called private equity. The difference between private equity and what they are is they use their own money as opposed to using other people's
right.
money. And
that makes it very private equity.
Right. So it's owned by two 32-year-old Harvard graduates, Blackstone investment banking background. And they decided they want to get into accounting. And we had a meeting. And this would have been their first accounting firm that they want to partner with. And when they left, we all looked. And I'm going to tell you, Bill, you have a lot of partners. It's not often you have partners that have a unanimous decision. This was a total unanimous decision that, you know what, these are the right guys. This is a great program. let's merge in with them. So on August 1st, we basically partnered with them. They ended up with 60% of our business and we kept 40%. Since then, they said, you know what, we'll grow slowly. Let's see where it is. Well, I'm not going to brag, but they haven't met me before. And I introduced them to a bunch of firms, and then they had some firms. And it's January 11th, and I think we're up to 400 people in the network group.
Wow.
And there's one, two, three or four more on the horizon before the end of the month. And they've had to grow fast. And, you know, I said, listen, we got to push this. This is what we need. And now we have a back office of accounting, HR, recruiting. They hired a general counsel. They have a compliance officer, CFO. And it's allowed us to help our clients with more services, to branch out and become larger. And what it really is nobody in the accounting world is looking at the $5 to $20 million firms. They're looking at the larger firms. Nobody was really looking at this. And I think the plan is to be, you know, $500 million in the next few years. But what it is it's really changing the profession. Like, I look at it and I'm like, you know, I'm in the middle of it and I'm the CEO of the group and helping these guys do what they, obviously they're better at scaling than I am, but just being involved with them, I think we're changing the profession in a great way. And I think at the end of the day, I could, you know what, I made a mark on this profession. You know, you do what you do for you, you know, you do what you do for your people. But to change a profession, that's an interesting concept that I never thought of. And that really gets me excited. And I think eventually that would be the pinnacle of what I did in this profession and what I did in this career. So,
well, I think that is actually, you know, a perfect place maybe to end it, because that's, you know, talking about, a life-changing excitement. And, you know, I think knowing you as many years as I do and your growth mindset, always looking to do new things and to grow. And this, you know, puts you as the CEO in the driver's seat of, you know, an organization now that grew exponentially, but now has the ability to, as you said, to grow and to scale, you know, even beyond what you probably would have even previously dreamed of, right?
Yes. So, you know, listen, we're just one piece of this whole thing, and we're autonomous and together at the same time, but it we're all pushing the oars in the same way. And, you know, I've met some great people along the way and it's been tremendous. So hopefully that'll continue until the next podcast.
That's right. Well, Dave, I want to thank you for being on today and letting us explore the fingerprints on your success. It was really great having you on the program, and I'm really, really grateful that you're able to do it. And I wish you the continued success and good luck as you continue to grow your company.
And Bill, thanks for having me. We've known each other a long time, and this was great. This is better than watching the Jets lose.
Hey, there's, you know, the nice thing about the end of every season is we start looking forward to the next one. You know, so we always have hope, Dave. We always have hope.
We do.
You know, it's the it's the curse of Joe Willie Namath. You know, when he guaranteed that win in Super Bowl III, I'm pretty sure he made a deal with the devil, and Jets fans may be waiting a lifetime for another Super Bowl. So
we got it.
In any event, on that note, Dave, thanks again. Great having you. And we'll talk to you soon.
You got it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Fingerprints on Success podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Mandelbaum Barrett PC specializes in partnering with successful business owners and proven entrepreneurs on all of their legal matters. Visit www.mblawfirm.com for more information. Once again, it's www.mblawfirm.com. We'll see you on the next episode.